It's time to get sexy, so watch Secular Sexuality live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytss and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
And welcome to another episode of Talk Heathen. Today is Sunday, November 20th, 2022. I am your host, Objectively Dan, and joining me live in studio all the way from Tulsa, Oklahoma, it is none other than Forrest Valkai. Forrest,
hey.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. That was way too cool of an intro to have my stupid face up there like that.
That's not true. Your stupid face belongs in that intro.
That means okay? the
world to me. It's really good. Forrest, I'm happy that you're here. And I'm happy that you get to be, well, first off, this is your first time in the actual studio.
Yeah, I've been watching this studio for like 10 years and like it's freaking crazy.
It is pretty wild.
Very strange.
It is pretty wild. And it's a different experience. I'm really excited for today's show. Been looking forward to it for a while. And I hope you guys are too. And if you want to participate in today's show, you can because it is a call-in show. So we are live right now and we have open lines. So if you want to talk to us, the number to that is going to be on the screen below. It's 512-991-9242, or you can call from your computer at tiny.cc/callth. We were having some lovely conversations about how there's taste buds in the anus before program. Because, folks, Forrest is a science freak, okay? Yeah. He gets freaky for science, and he will tell you facts whether you want to know them or not.
My goal is to, like, make you, like, question the reality that you weren't sure you wanted to be a part of in the first place.
Exactly.
That's what science is about.
Gosh, you make me question some things, Forrest. You make me question a lot of things. But we want to question what you guys think about possibly what you believe and why. Maybe you have a God belief, maybe you have another kind of belief, or maybe you want to know what we think about stuff. Again, that's a good reason to call in. Real quickly, I just want to tell you guys about some ways you can support Talk Heathen and the ACA. One of the ways is through Patreon. You can go to Patreon. It's tiny.cc/PatreonTH. And of course, if you're one of our top five patrons, you will be able to get a shout out on today's show. If you like the video and subscribe to the channel, enable those notifications and comment below and tell us who your favorite caller is. Look, I know you guys want to say me, but please give some love to Forrest today. Okay. He really needs it. He needs that ego boost.
It's true. I'm a sad man.
But anytime you engage with the channel like that, it just helps the channel grow and helps our numbers. If you're watching on YouTube, that's a great way to do it. Another way is becoming a channel member. If you click the join button below the video, you'll get custom chat emotes and help perpetuate the mission of Talk Heathen and the atheist community of Austin. And last but not least, if you go to the live chat, you'll see that we have a fundraiser. 100% of the proceeds for that fundraiser goes directly to the ACA. YouTube does not take any money. So if you're not a big fan of YouTube, that's a great way to give us money without giving YouTube any money. So just something to think about. Forrest, you ready for today's program?
Yeah, man. I'm ready to start it whenever you are.
All righty. Well, let's get right into it. We have a call already. So let's talk to Tom, who is calling from Michigan. Tom, you're live on Talk Heathen today. What is happening?
Not a whole lot. There's a little snow here, but it's a pretty nice day.
Well, that's good. That's good. What do you want to talk to us about today, Tom?
The movie The Big Lebowski and then The Religion of Dudism.
Okay. Yeah. So I've seen Big Lebowski. Have you seen Big Lebowski?
I've seen The Big Lebowski.
It's been many years. So, you know, what specifically about Dudism did you want to talk about? Because, like, you're not going to say, like, it's real, right? You're not going to say, like, it's... I mean, like, if you're an emphatic believer in the tenets, I suppose that means it's real. But, like, it doesn't make any claims to, like, a god or anything, right?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to have to be refreshed on Dudism. Yeah. I didn't want to have to have this whole...
Yeah. Yeah. So go ahead, Tom. Tell us what you want
to
say.
Well, in order to call in, I had to identify as a theist.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the people who study religion will say there's monotheism, there's polytheism, there's deism.
Sure.
So it's a lot of I don't care. But when I talk to atheists, they want me to give a definition of the God that I believe in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you believe in?
In a strict definition, I would say I'm a deist.
Okay.
That's God fine. Does exist, but he's not involved in my life.
All right. What's your reason for that?
Over the years, people have asked me to prove a miracle or demonstrate a miracle, and I can't do that.
Okay.
So I've come up with, I've watched the movie The Big Lebowski, and I've learned to just sit back and chill, that these definitions and proving things in the long run, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so is that what you mean by dudism? You just mean that, like, you don't really need a reason to believe in the thing, just kind of let your belief be a belief?
Correct.
Okay, so what would you say would be the difference between yourself and someone like Forrest and I who don't actually have a God belief?
I think it's a lot about relaxing and not trying to prove something.
Sure.
And I also think it's a difference between an organized religion where there's a building and, I don't want to say scripture, but a written down on paper set of rules.
Okay.
And a worldview where it's just kind of an attitude or a philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, like, you can, I feel like you can have those kinds of attitudes and not be a deist, though, right? So, yeah. Like, there's, you know, all strains of Buddhism, yeah, for example, that don't have any kind of God belief, but still have practices and tenets to a philosophy. Taoism is similar in that regard. Confucianism is often argued as a religion and doesn't have any strict adherence to any gods. So, like, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is, why call yourself a deist at that point? In other words, what's the difference between just living your life how you feel like is most optimal versus believing that a God exists, right? Because I feel like those two things are pretty separate.
So in very broad terms, I agree with you.
Okay.
You said Taoism.
Yeah, or Taoism.
And I don't know from a classroom the difference between Dudism and Taoism. So I think we're playing a word game at that point.
Well, I don't know the difference either off the top of my head, but like I think the whole point is like there's lots of like secular philosophies out there that equate to like you could use the word like worldview or belief systems or whatever like that don't involve a God. So just like why bother yourself with adding the God claim in there?
Right, because you did describe yourself as a deist, right? So
in order to call in, I had to choose between atheist and theist.
Right. Yeah, but you just explained that, like, you're actually
general
a deist.
Way God exists.
Yeah, but you do think God exists, though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's
what we're interested in. Yeah. When we do that, the call screeners do that, it's just for our sake, because in general, we do, like, take precedence for theist callers, right? We want theist callers to call in. So that's just for our identification for our sake. It doesn't have to necessarily describe your philosophy in the most accurate terms, right? So, like, you know, what we're interested in is you say that a God exists, and we just want to know why. Like, I understand you have a relaxed philosophy that seems very agreeable to us, but that really doesn't have anything to do with whether or not a God exists, right? Or at least you haven't demonstrated that to me to see that connection.
I will just to be a nitpicky. Yeah. It seems agreeable to Dan. I have a lot of problems with it.
Okay,
like, I don't want to get into that yet. I just mean
like the chill vibe. It's the vibe that I'm okay
with. The vibe is fine.
The vibes
are impeccable. Yeah, but I'm not, like, I don't.
I wouldn't make my philosophical thesis statement. You know,
yeah,
based
just,
on
just
Judaism,
chill. Yeah,
like,
but like, anyway. No, that's I have several questions for later.
Right,
like,
but that's right what now. We're interested in, Tom. Like, you say a God exists. Why should we believe a God exists?
Well, so by definition, God exists, but God's not involved.
Okay.
How do you mean
and
by
I
definition?
Try and make that distinction when someone says, well, do a miracle, and I can't do that.
Right, but what do you mean by definition God exists?
Yeah. So I still, for my worldview, I want God to exist.
Why?
It's a hopeful, wishful kind of, because it makes me happy.
Okay.
Sure. But like that, why is that? I don't understand. If I say like, I would like for there to be a tooth fairy because I'm going to lose a tooth soon and I'd like some extra spending money. You know what I mean?
If I said,
I can't then say by definition, the tooth fairy does exist because that sounds nice to me.
Or if I said, I want to be married to Selena Gomez, that, you know, that may be a wish that I have, but that doesn't mean that I'm actually married to her. Right. Which isn't an actual desire I have, but would be funny. Right.
I'll make sure to tell her you're no longer interested.
Yeah, please do.
Because
go ahead, Tom.
Well, you want me to explain a personal belief.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what I'm trying to say is God is not personal.
Okay. Oh. Well, I can describe things that are impersonal too, though. Like Jupiter is not personal to me, but I can describe that it exists, you know. So why does God evade description? Because you have a belief in him. You have a reason for believing in him. So we're just interested in why.
Okay. So all of these answers are inside my head, not written down on paper.
Yes,
that's what we're asking you.
The paper that I don't have isn't inside a building.
Okay.
Right, that's why we're asking you. We're not reading a piece of paper or anything. We're asking you what's inside your head. Why do you conform to this belief?
Well, because it's easier to just go around being happy and not going to a building on a certain day and opening to a certain page.
Right, I dig that. Yeah. Like, really, I'm not trying to overcomplicate, and I'm really not trying to back you into a corner. Like,
right.
What I really want to understand is, like, you keep saying this makes you happy, and you keep saying that it's just easier and that that's simple, and this is really the biggest issue I have is would you use this same line of thinking, this same format that you're giving us right now, that you're justifying your belief in God, would you use that same line of thinking for literally anything else in the entire world? You know, Dan just talked about the planet Jupiter. Never mind the fact that you can go outside and look at the telescope and look at it. If I asked you if Jupiter existed, or if you asked me, and my answer was, you know, it's easier just to kind of go around with Jupiter, man. I don't have to read a science book if I just think that Jupiter exists. It makes me smile.
Yeah.
Is that a good enough reason to believe in that? If I told you the exact same thing about the Easter Bunny, would you accept it then? Like, why would you use that for that if you wouldn't use it for anything else? Or would you use that for anything else is an important question.
So if you're asking me about spirits, angels, demons, ghosts,
anything,
I'd probably use the same definition.
Okay. So,
but if it's something that's physical, like the Eiffel Tower or the Statue of Liberty, no, I wouldn't.
Okay. So, like, what if we make up something? Like, what if I talk about, you know, something that I've said before is like in my office back at my home, I've got a closet, and in that closet, there's a goblin. His name is Roland, and he grants wishes and eats Subway sandwiches, and he disappears every time you open the door. Is it good enough for me to say this belief makes me happy? I don't have to read a book about it. I don't have to know anything about goblins. I just know there's a goblin, and he's pretty cool. He's a good dude, and like sometimes he doesn't grant wishes, sometimes he does, sometimes he grants them later and doesn't tell me. Like, it's whatever. Is that an okay thing for me to say, or does that sound kind of weird? Would you accept that I said, like,
yes,
you think that's appropriate?
No, I would accept that.
Why?
Yeah, I think it's appropriate.
Okay, so if I tell you that I believe
because
there's a goblin living
movie,
in my closet eating Subway sandwiches, you think that I'm a sane and rational human being for these reasons?
I know lots of children that have imaginary friends. It doesn't bother me.
But we know that...
Yeah, lots of children do, and then children tend to grow up and get out of that, right?
Yeah, that's the thing, Tom. We know they're imaginary friends. Like, you just call them imaginary yourself, right?
We're going around in circles.
I don't think... Well, Tom, you say that this belief makes you happy, and here's the thing, right? We also don't go to church. We also don't avow to a scripture, and we're pretty happy, too. We don't need a God belief to do that, right? So, you know, maybe that God belief does make you happy. I won't take that away from you. What I'm trying to ask is, okay, but a belief can make you happy, but it can also not be true, right? So do you believe, when you say that you believe in God, do you believe
absolutely.
That's a true fact? Or do you just believe that because it makes you happy? Because, like, if you just believe it makes you happy, I can't do anything for you. But, like, if you believe it as a fact, that changes things, right? That does change the nature of what you're saying.
Right. That's no longer an imaginary friend. That's a statement about reality, and that matters.
So very quickly, 2 points.
Yeah.
Number one is the definition of God, whether God is personal or impersonal. But more to the point, the second point, in the movie The Big Lebowski, at the end, I forget his name, but he dies and he's cremated. And the two guys, the dude and his friend, they throw the ashes into the air at the ocean, and the ashes fly back into the face of the dude. And he doesn't care. He doesn't have any deep philosophical moment when these ashes of a human being fly into his face. It's just, I can get along. And that's the attitude that I try to have. If you don't believe in God, fine. If you want to run in circles and try and prove that God doesn't exist, the burden of proof is on you to prove God is personal, and we'll just run in circles.
Right. I guess the thing is, like, what I can't get past is that you keep explaining this philosophy of just like, it is what it is. Very stoic, very kind of a semi-existentialist kind of nihilist, just like, whatever, just it's fine, it is what it is, I'm going to live. And that all sounds lovely. I don't see the connection between that and making a statement about anything being true. And the question that I asked earlier that I don't think, like, maybe I didn't phrase it right, is that would you use that for anything else? Like, my job I'm a biologist and I teach biology online. So, like, right now, you know, when I go back home to Tulsa in a couple of days, I'm going to have to go back into a lab and do testing and send samples off and get numbers and like write about what I've found and why that matters. Do you think it would be appropriate for me to write in a report like, yeah, you know what, I got these numbers, but it doesn't really matter. I kind of feel like it should be this way anyway, and it should be this other thing. And like that, would that be an acceptable way for me to write a scientific report? Would that be a thing that I could then build knowledge on? Could I then go teach that to my classes and go tell a bunch of kids like, hey, you know what, I'm pretty sure there were dinosaurs, but maybe there weren't. Who cares? You know, it's just whatever. You believe what you want to believe. Is that an appropriate way to live in any other intellectual like circumstance ever, forever? Like, is there any other time you would use the philosophy that you're giving us here in terms of like truth statements, not just whether you're happy or not, or whether you care about this or that, in terms of making a statement of something being true? Is there ever a time you would do this ever in any other circumstance?
Very quickly, no.
Okay. That's important to me.
There's two
Why
things
not?
Going on.
Why not?
So there's two situations. There's one is, if I was a judge in a courtroom, no, you'd have to have evidence,
right?
Not just wishful pie in the sky beliefs.
Yes.
Right.
But outside of work, outside of an occupation, when I'm on vacation at the beach, that's the whole point of relaxing is not to worry about those things, about what happens after life.
No, but listen, you need evidence for things outside of a courtroom. Right? Like, if you want to know that your car is going to work in the morning, but you want to know that there's evidence that your car has worked in the past, right? But Tom, you use evidence for things every day in your life.
We're in a funeral parlor, only in a morgue.
Tom, what we're pointing out
in the morgue.
Tom, what we're pointing out is that it seems like you're making an exception to a general rule that you probably use for every other aspect of your life, which is you use evidence
to.
That's
exactly what I'm doing.
But why? Why would you do that?
That sounds horrible to do.
Because there's an exception to the rule.
Why would there be an exception to the rule?
Because not all frogs are frogs. Not all animals are frogs. All frogs are animals, but not all animals are frogs.
Okay, but
I don't know what to make of that. We weren't talking about frogs. We were talking about
I don't believe in reincarnation.
Okay, well, see, why you? It sounds like you're just picking and choosing.
But
then,
what if
right?
I said I do believe in reincarnation because it makes me smile and it does, like would that be a convincing argument for you to then decide to believe in reincarnation because it makes me happy? Because it's like, why would that matter? Either something is true or it isn't. And so, like, if I'm talking about the way that I look at life, like, I have no problem with the philosophical claims that you're making. Like, I love my favorite schools of philosophy are Stoicism and cosmic nihilism and existentialism. I love that. But if I were to sit here and talk about those things with the same way that I talk about science, it would be as inappropriate as the way if I talked about science when I talk about those things.
Yeah.
It makes no difference what your personal philosophy or your views on life or anything like that are. Either something is true or it isn't. So I guess the biggest question that I have for you, Tom, is does it matter to you if you believe something that's true or not? If you believe something that isn't true, does that matter to you?
You did it as a positive, and then you did it as a negative.
It should go both ways.
It's important that things are true. I'll do it as a positive.
Sure.
Yes, I believe it's important that things are true and factual.
Okay,
cool. So then why wouldn't you apply that kind of critical thinking to your God claim as well?
And last response here, because we got to move on to some other callers.
Yeah. So my definition of God is that it does exist, but it doesn't interact with my life.
Right.
Let's do it in a scientific way. Yes, I believe there's oxygen. And yes, I believe oxygen is factually important for my breathing and living.
Okay.
I've been told there's liquid methane under pressure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
But it doesn't, it's there, but it doesn't affect my life. So I don't care about it. Out of sight, out of mind. It would have to impact my life on a personal level before I would care about it.
Well,
and God doesn't meet that threshold of impact.
Right. So if I sit here and say, like, I don't believe that liquid methane exists when we have proof that it does, but it doesn't affect me. So I don't believe that it exists. Does that matter?
Yeah. So I'm making the distinction between it's factually there and by distinction, it has some kind of cause and effect on my daily life. That's where you and I are connecting on that one point.
Yes, because Tom, the world is bigger than just you and I, and there's a lot of things that exist that don't impact my personal life. That doesn't mean that we could just maybe call it yes or no, whether they exist or not.
That's the thing. I want to believe true things, whether or not they directly impact me. You know, the orbit of Pluto doesn't impact me.
Tom, we really got to go because we've been on this call for a bit, and we got some other people that want to talk to us.
It's me rambling. I apologize.
No, it's fine. I do appreciate you calling in. I hope we made our points clear. clear. But yeah, like, we don't just believe stuff because, sorry, it makes us happy. I mean, like, everybody has those kinds of beliefs on, like, a smaller scale.
Yeah, philosophically, sure. Like, the way that I decide to handle a good or a bad situation, that's totally philosophical. But, like, that's because that is subjective by definition.
Right. There's
nobody who can tell me, you know, objectively if this was a happy or a sad thing.
Right.
You know?
And when we talk about that, we usually mean in how we make decision-making things in our lives.
Yeah.
That's different from, like, things existing or not.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Which is, like, a different category of object. Yeah. But, you know, Tom, I hope we got our point across. Again, like, the vibes, you know, you want to treat others well, and
that's rad.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hawaiian shirts every day. I'm all about that. But, like, that doesn't mean that we can't just throw every reality out the window and just say, well, I like this because it's cool. I don't know.
Something's true or it's not. And
right.
It's important.
So anyway, real quickly, before we move on to some of the callers, I want to tell you guys about other ways you can support the ACA. And one of it is through Amazon. If you shop at Amazon, if you go to tiny.cc/AmazonSmileACA, you can designate the Atheist Community of Austin as your selected charity, and Amazon will donate a portion of their profit directly to the ACA. So if you don't even feel like giving us any money, if you enjoy the free content that we put out there every week and you're still not willing to give us money, if you maybe shop on Amazon, and maybe this is a better way to do it, which doesn't even cost any extra money to you. It doesn't add a tax or anything like that. Just a portion of what you're already paying for goes to the ACA. So something to consider. Another way you can support the ACA is going to our merch store. Our merch is at tiny.cc/merchaca. You can get all of your favorite t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, all the cool stuff. And of course, we do have a monthly shirt that we are doing each month, and it's limited time only. After this month, it's going to go away. So check out the shirt that we have for this month and then go from there. Next, also, I want to talk to you about the channel that houses all of the shows of the ACA, including Talk Heathen, including Atheist Experience, Truth Wanted. We have it all in podcast form. So if you're like me and you just like to listen to stuff in an audio form, we got your back. You can go to tiny.cc/AENpodcast. For audio versions of all of our programs. Last but not least, I want to tell you guys that you can also become a part of the Talk Heathen community on Facebook if you want to join our page. It's tiny.cc/FBTH. I should mention this as a fan-run page run by fans for fans. If you want to talk to other people who, you know, like this program, and probably
all three of them,
then you should definitely check it out there if you haven't already. And with that out of the way, Forrest, I think we should talk to our next caller.
I'm excited about this one.
This
one, looking at the monitor.
Listen, it's just for you, dude. Like, the universe has aligned. Our calls stay.
It's a wonderful time
for you. It's David who's calling in from California. David, you're live on Talk Heathen. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Going okay. How about yourself?
Oh, I had you on speakerphone. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, are you ready for round three or four or whatever it is?
Yeah, absolutely, man. What's going on with you?
Oh, not much. I was going to talk about, I just wanted to participate in the Atheist Church here because I haven't really been going to church myself very much since the COVID pandemic started. So this is my church too.
Yeah, we appreciate you being, you know, a little bit isolated. I know it sucks, but it's really important.
Yeah. Well, I'm still sane. I just wanted to give you a chance because I didn't really feel like you were.
Well, David, let's give some context.
Well-versed in cosmology.
Let's give some context to this conversation. What specifically?
I'm going to talk about evolution.
Okay, yeah. So you want to talk about evolution, and you don't believe evolution has ever happened. Period.
Not the way that you claim. No.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Let's hear it then.
Yeah.
Why do you not think evolution happens the way that science broadly has claimed it happened?
Well, one is nobody's ever heard of it in history.
Well, that's not true. Yeah, I've heard of evolution, and I'm in history right now. So that's one strike. David. I don't know
about past history.
Right. Yeah, we have writings on evolution that go back hundreds of years. Even if you just look at Darwin, that was 200 years.
You know, David, most people in human history haven't heard of computers either, but computers still definitely exist.
Yeah.
Right. So
we have different writings about
started with Darwin.
No, the evolution as like a science that people actually like started locking down and like really focusing on started with Darwin and Wallace's work. But honestly, leading up to our understanding of evolution, that was another like 200 years. That's like in the late 1500s, early 1600s, when you have like Steno, who is like, you know, identifying tongue stones as actual fossils. And then you had like the understanding of what extinctions and what fossils were completely shook what our understanding of biology was, completely changed our understanding of the natural world. So like, this is something that's several hundred years in the making. And since Darwin wrote, you know, On the Origin of Species back in the 1800s, we now have like 200 years of further, you know, research into it, mountains and mountains of proof, evidence, observable experience. Like, it's probably one of the most well-documented and tested theories in scientific history.
Okay, so you're claiming that since science has been advancing, that evolution has come to our knowledge.
Yeah, the same way that it would be about, like, quantum mechanics or any other thing. It was always there. We just learned about it, you know, relatively a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah.
But as Dan pointed out, we just got computers pretty recently, too. And yet the possibility, electrons were already around.
Right, right.
We just learned how to use them in a new way.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all the way down through my family, nobody's ever heard of any species changing or
David,
anything like that. That's what I'm saying.
Why should
you
we
don't
care?
Have anywhere
no, David, David,
history,
why?
Anybody ever records that?
David, why should we care what your family thinks about evolution? Honestly, why? Why does that matter at
because
all?
Because I'm related to Adam. You go all the way back to Adam, and there's no recorded history saying that evolution has ever occurred.
What no recorded history of Adam either.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're making the claim, oh, the Bible, are you saying the Bible doesn't talk about? Yeah, the Bible doesn't talk about a lot of things. That doesn't mean that they don't exist, right?
Well, do you believe in history?
Do I believe in history as a concept, as a social science? I mean, like, broadly speaking, yes.
Sure. Things have happened.
Yeah, things have happened.
You believe in some history. You don't believe in biblical history. You don't believe in
That's correct. I don't believe
basically all of it.
No, I believe in the same way with literally everything else, which is what we were talking about in the last call as well. I believe in the things that I have evidence for.
Right.
So, like, if you told me that George Washington was the first president of the United States, I would believe you because we have a tremendous amount of evidence proving that. If you told me that George Washington built a rocket ship and went to Mars, I would not believe you because we do not have evidence for that.
Did the Persian Empire invade, the nations of Israel, several thousand years ago? Yes. And that's somewhat recorded in the Bible. Is it accurately recorded? No. But that is a historical phenomenon.
Yeah, you had one data
happened,
point there. Yeah,
right?
Sure.
But did we all come from Adam, for example? No.
We have no evidence for that whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you believe in evolution, but we don't have any proof for it.
We have mountains and mountains.
That's like believing in Santa Claus.
So I'm actually a biologist, and I specialize in studying evolutionary biology and bioanthropology. That's what I do for a living. So, like, we have mountains and mountains of proof and mountains of evidence for these things. I would be happy to, like, walk through them with you a little bit if you'd like to talk about them. I don't want to, like, just lecture you, but, like, I'd be happy to, like, share some.
I'm not claiming to know as much as you about biology. That would be ridiculous. I don't know as much about cosmology as cosmologists or astrophysicists, but I can still refute the Big Bang theory.
Okay,
that's incredible. An incredible amount.
Order to make that claim, you would need to at least know the basics of it and, like, be able to talk about it. Like, I don't know anything about electrical engineering. I know zero about that. I would never want to be a part of an electrical engineering club that would have someone like me as a member. And yet, if you told me that this computer here can do some incredible thing, I would be a lot more likely to believe someone who is an electrical engineer than me if I told you, no, it can't, because I don't know anything about it, and therefore I don't think it's real. So, like, I'd be happy to talk to you about evolution. Can you maybe start by defining what you think evolution is? Maybe we can start there.
Well, I'm just saying, probably the greatest proof, I think, against evolution is if you just look at the species today, right? Well, it's a finished product, right? Everything is complex now.
Evolution is not finished at all.
Biology, everything is a completed
It's not.
Complex no. system already.
It's not.
What do you mean by completed? Yeah. Do you mean evolution has stopped or like we're as far as we're supposed to get?
Yeah.
No, that's not real.
Evolution, no, it never started. Hold on a second. Hold on. This is my evidence. Okay. Got to let me.
Yeah, by all means.
Okay. Like the claims of coral cannot adapt to changing saline in the oceans or any other species. They're all protected under the Endangered Species Act because they can't adapt and they can't.
The reason why we have species protection acts for that, David, is because they can't adapt in the time frame that global warming, climate change has set as a precedent for us. Okay, and that's not only true for right now; that's true in history as well. Species have died out because of global climate changes. That's why there are certain species that aren't around anymore because of rapid changes in the environment that didn't give enough time for them to adapt. So that's not only historical. It's not only factual. It's quite historical. There's quite a precedent for that.
And we can literally watch with our own eyes in several species. Yeah.
No. Because you're claiming that things that evolved over billions of years when the conditions were not perfect. So if they could evolve over billions of years when the conditions were not perfect, then certainly they should be able to survive now when the conditions
not within a generation.
What you need to understand is that number one, two things that are really big here is that number one, conditions were never perfect. Nothing is ever perfect. There's no such thing as perfect. There's always what we call selection pressure. And selection pressure, the definition is a source of differential mortality or fertility, which is the fancy way of saying it's a thing, either living or non-living, in an environment that causes certain individuals to not be able to survive or reproduce. So when we talk about salinity in the ocean or pick any other thing, right? If I have, this ocean here that has X percent salinity, and here's this species of coral that's just fine in that. If I slowly increase that salinity over the course of generation after generation after generation of coral, then the ones that can't survive aren't going to, and they aren't going to reproduce, and they're not going to pass along the alleles, the ability to do that. And however, the ones that are weird coral that can survive in this extra salty environment, they're going to have lots of babies that have their DNA that can survive in salty environments. And over the course of multiple generations, this whole population of coral is going to get better and better and better at surviving in salty environments until to the point where now you could add more salt and it'd be just fine. And the important thing to remember here, the key to this metaphor here is that number one, individuals didn't evolve. No one coral just got better at eating salt. Whatever. It's the whole population over the course of several generations that evolved. And number two, as they evolved into one environment, as they gained fitness, we would say, in one environment, they lost fitness in another environment. If you were now to desalinate the water and take all that salt back out, now the super salty coral would be at a disadvantage. And the graph would shift back in the other direction. So, this is something that happens over successive generations, over huge periods of time. What Dan was saying, quite rightly, is that anthropogenic climate change and things like that.
You don't have any evidence.
You don't have any evidence of what exactly?
You don't have any evidence of long periods of time.
Of long periods of time. So yeah, we very do. And there's a few of them, actually, that we can start with. You can go back to Steno's Law of Superpositioning, where we look at the layers of the geological strata and see that they are, in fact, stacked up. Those layers take a long time to deposit. So we can say, clearly, this thing up here is younger than this thing down here. Now we ask how young, right? Even if we didn't have anything else past that, we can look at the fossil record and say, all right, so there was this animal, and then we go a few meters up, and now there's a totally different thing. It's like that right there, you don't need anything else. But if you want to talk about the actual ages, we have a tremendous amount of ways to test the age of the Earth, not with the probably the best and most robust one being radiometric dating.
Right.
We can get almost precise down damn near to the day,
That's fiction. That's science fiction.
No, it's
radiometric
not.
Dating?
That's listen,
how do you think radiometric dating works?
Yeah. It's all science fiction.
How do you think it works? What do you think it is?
Science fiction.
What is it? How does it work?
Well, let me finish. Wait a minute.
We want you to actually respond instead of asking us another question for us to go on another 3-minute tangent and then you not respond to what we're saying. Because, David, it doesn't sound like you're listening to us at all. Here's the thing. Even before radiocarbon dating existed, we knew that the Earth was over thousands of years old. We didn't even have a development of nuclear science and able to do that. One, because of the principles that Forrest just mentioned, but also innumerable other ways that we can look at the age of things. That science, looking at how old something is, goes across many different fields of study. There's tons of evidence that supports this. You saying, no, there isn't, and just plugging your hands in your ears, that's not adding anything to the conversation.
No,
I haven't heard you engage in anything that we've brought to the table here.
You haven't let me finish the point I was making.
We're asking you just to, if you're going to say that it's science fiction.
Dating.
Yeah, if you're going to say it's science fiction, we hope you would at least tell us what you think it is.
I'll cover that, but let me first finish the point I was making in the first place, and you kept talking.
We'll give you a brief moment.
I was talking about that the system has to be perfect, and that's the whole idea behind the claims behind science about the coral and about other animals that are protected species and all this other stuff, that the system has to be perfect.
You're wrong.
We already said it doesn't.
That's
perfection.
Not how that works.
That's your claim.
No, it's not.
This claim for a living. You are wrong about the claim. That's not what we claim. That's not how this works.
You aren't protecting the coral and the endangered species.
Yes, we protect endangered species. Yes. because human caused intervention is destroying those species. When we talk about like dangers to biodiversity, there's an acronym HIPPO, and that's human action, human population, invasive species, pollution, over-harvesting, and there's a human population is the second one. Habitat destruction, that's right. Habitat destruction, invasive species, human population, pollution, and over-harvesting. Like, these are the things that destroy environments, destroy ecosystems, destroy species. We know that biodiversity strengthens ecosystems. We need biodiversity to survive because we are also animals living on this earth. We need this ecosystem to be strong. So that's why we protect these different species, because we want them to stick around, and our activities as humans is harmful to them. That's why we do it. It has nothing to do with perfection. There is no perfection.
You're only making my point. So
how?
The planet was designed for humans. Thank you for admitting that. I
didn't say anything
didn't
even
say
close to
remotely
that.
Remotely anything near
what
that.
What part of what I just said
you
means
just
that?
Did that?
How?
Exactly what did I say that means the planet is designed for humans?
How? How, David?
So the system, okay, well, like for one, like the pH level of water, okay, we can only drink a certain acidic level of water, right? So it's obviously designed for life. It's not designed, it's not an evolutionary process.
So really quick question.
Water being, I mean, the coral exists in anywhere from 7.5 pH to up to 8.3 or something like that. So it's not like it takes billions of years.
How do you change the pH of water?
The oceans all have different levels. The oceans all have anywhere from 7.5 up to 8.3. So
right.
To tell me that coral cannot survive in a minimal change is ridiculous.
Right. So really quick,
of climate
if you
change.
Have a if you climate have a puddle, if you have a puddle in the ground, like this is the old analogy that Douglas Adams came up with, right? There's a puddle in the ground. Is it make sense for the puddle to say, the ground was so perfectly designed for me to be here? Look, it's exactly the shape of me. It fits me perfectly. Or does it make more sense to say, there was a hole in the ground and the puddle formed there, right? That's the analogy. The earth is not made for us. We evolved here on the earth.
Yes,
the life that wouldn't have survived here on the earth isn't on the earth because it couldn't have survived here on the earth. The things that could survive here on the earth are here on the earth under the conditions of the earth. That's logic.
It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious that, and this goes into your radiometric dating point that you want to make, that the earth is definitely older than our own sun. Okay. And
how would that even make sense?
Any younger or older? There's no evidence that our sun is younger than any other sun. They're all the same age.
Except for the fact that there's a huge mountain of evidence that we can just look at other places in the universe and clearly see that they're much older than ours. But you haven't even answered the one question that we asked you. Radiometric dating, David?
Well, I told you it's science fiction.
What is it?
Well, what is the process?
What are we saying that it is? What do we believe happens that allows us to tell the age?
We're asking for a Wikipedia first paragraph summary. We're not even asking you to go into the specifics. We just want to make sure that you understand the concept.
Well, I understand how radioaction. You know,
okay, well then, how does it work?
Okay,
just please a quick
tell
us. Rundown.
Well, supposedly there's half lives of the uranium-238 and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so
what's a
supposedly
half-life?
There's half lives of the uranium-238.
What's a half-life?
That's interesting.
If you can give me just the basic.
First off, carbon is not a. You're using uranium-238 and assigning billions of years, but carbon you can't use that to date anything supposedly more than like
50,000 years
or something like
50,000 years is the end of carbon-14 dating.
But that's not
the answer to the question, David. What actually is
younger.
Radiometric dating? How does it work? Give us the basics. What you can answer it in two sentences. What are just the most basic fundamental? What actually is the process of radiometric dating? What are we testing for?
Your claim is that suns exploded and formed heavy elements.
Okay,
we need you to
stop talking about what you think we claim, and we want you to answer the question. If you don't understand the basic principles of how the science works, how can you possibly critique it? How can you possibly sit here and call up this show and talk to a biologist and say everything in your field of science is absolutely wrong when you can't even give us a single basic, single sentence summary of what you're talking about? Honestly.
You won't be quiet.
We won't be quiet.
Oh, man, that's
here,
amazing.
I'm going to be quiet for 5 whole seconds, David.
Go ahead, David.
What is radiometric dating? Go.
I just told you.
No, you didn't.
It's the claim that stars exploded and created radio.
That's not radiometric
stars
dating.
Stars exploding isn't involved.
All right, David, we've got to let you go because we have other callers that we need to talk to.
I wanted to ask him to define evolution, too. I don't think we could have done it.
Like, here's the thing. We're not going to get anywhere with somebody like David because David isn't interested about what you have to say.
Right.
And he's not interested in what I have to say. He's interested in trying to make us look foolish.
He heard somewhere on some person told him that radiometric dating doesn't work. And he was like, those are words. And now I am also going to say those words.
Right.
And I'm going to call a thing so I can say as many words as possible.
Right.
You haven't actually thought about what you're saying.
You know what, Forrest? Yeah. My family has never said that David from California exists.
I don't think he does.
So I don't think David actually exists.
You know what, though? Because when I heard, I know what David is when stars explode and something else. And that means that it's not real.
Right. I agree with that. Anyway, we have to move on. I have to tell you guys about some other ways you can support this program, okay? But before we do that, next show after this is going to be the Nonprofits, okay, which is the flagship show of the Atheist Community of Austin. So stick around and watch that at 3 p.m. Central Time today. Link to that is going to be in the description, or you can check it out on this stream. And, of course, the ACA wants to know, well, we want you to know what's going on in our community, and we have a place where you can go to do that. It is our website. It's www.atheist-community.org, and you can learn about all of the events we got going on. If you have questions about when we're doing shows in person like this, there's going to be links to that on the calendar on the website. It also tells you how you can get involved if you want to volunteer in different capacities. We have a lot of different roles that we have that need to be filled, so that's one way you can look at that. And also, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you like, what you thought was effective, and most importantly, what we could do better. So the best way to do that is if you email us. You can email us at tv@atheist-community.org and just let us know. Let us know what you think. But with that out of the way, we have a promo that we need to show you, showing all the other stuff that we got going on at the ACA. So check it out.
People mean by this term alpha male?
The term is misappropriated from wolves having an alpha male in the pack, which it turns out is not true. But even so, people aren't wolves. So it wouldn't really have mattered.
Science checks out, yeah.
And they have this idea in the metaphysical market right now that if you have a piece of shungite and you put it by your computer, it'll suck up all the EMF waves so it doesn't affect your health.
Faith is not a reliable pathway to truth, and we can f*** a lot of stuff up relying on faith.
Oh, trust. If somebody quotes to me a Hebrews 11:1 one more time, I swear I will stab myself in the right eye.
We're not focusing in this conversation about the politics or the emotions or philosophical ramifications of transgender people in sports. We're actually talking about the science.
Even if you could prove it to me, I would be the first one to say you're right, and I would no longer be an atheist, but I would still be right here on the show telling everybody that God is not worthy of worship. The God of the Bible, the God of the Quran, the God of these religions is a monster, and if he's real, I am his enemy.
And welcome back to Talk Heathen, where we are going to continue to take your calls and hopefully have some good conversations, but you never know.
But at what cost?
At what cost? my sanity, for one. Probably yours, too. But anyway, we're going to move on. We're going to talk to our next caller. We have Mark talking to us from New York. Mark, you are live on Talk Heathen. What is going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going okay.
Fantastic, dude.
Good. I just found the channel, and I'm very happy to have found it. You seem like you have a great show and a great program here.
Thank you.
You know, I was just typing some things into the chat, and some of the folks there encouraged me to call in and kind of tell my story.
Great.
So I decided to do that because
wonderful. We always like it when folks call in based on what the chat is suggesting to do.
Like
those make pretty good conversations most of the time. No, seriously, they do. They're really good.
Well, audience interaction.
We're happy to hear.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
True. I love the chat. I'm a big proponent of the chat. So it is my first time, you know, listening to the program. So pardon, you know, if I'm somewhat of a novice in terms of how you guys like run the calls and things like that. But, you know, what's happened to me is that I've sort of gone from being a believer as, you know, a young kid, kind of getting indoctrinated, I guess you would say, to turning to science. And, you know, when I was a teenager, I read A Brief History of Time. My dad had the book.
Yeah. And
that's the book that got me into science. Love that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure a lot of people did as well. So, I was really interested in cosmology. And, as I got a little bit older and went to college and graduate school, I think I tended really to be more, I think I leaned more from agnostic to even atheist at certain points. I just wasn't really, I just didn't feel the belief inside of me. And from sort of a knowledge level, it seemed like there were more answers in science than anything else. And I just never really looked to religion as something that would provide sort of the ultimate answers that I think I was seeking.
Art agree, bro. Yeah. What a great show. All right, well, that's our time.
Wrap it up there.
So what ended up actually happening coincidentally was when COVID happened, we started working from home. I was just like on the computer a lot. I was listening to YouTube a lot, and I always liked debates. And so I just found, I went looking actually for debates between atheists and theists, like apologists. And I was kind of trying to keep an open mind. And, you know, part of me wonders if I'm a little biased to some extent, like things like Pascal's wager and things like that. But, you know, I've tried to keep an open mind about it. And it could be just the things I've been listening to and you know, the debates I've been following. But it seems to me like that there is a stronger, there's a stronger line of reason on the theist side than there is on the atheist side. And so that's where I've kind of landed. I don't really feel it in my heart.
All right.
But just from a logical perspective, you know, that's where I kind of landed.
So, Mark,
I want to talk about.
Yeah. So talking about that, is it because of Pascal's wager in particular, or is it some other kind of line of reasoning that has convinced you of this?
It's another line of reasoning. And I mentioned Pascal's wager just because that might be something that's sort of like an unconscious thing going on in the background.
Sure.
Maybe. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's really. Yeah.
Lay the logic on us.
Yeah.
Like, I want to hear this.
A couple absolutely. So the one argument, like the cosmological argument, I find as a pretty good argument either. And I know there's sort of various forms of that, but I've always liked philosophy. And so that those kinds of arguments appeal to me somewhat. And just sort of this argument that where does being come from? And it seems to me that the atheist doesn't really have an explanation.
So just so we're clear on the same page here, cosmological arguments is the idea that there's like order to the universe, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We just double checked. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page. We're saying the same thing you're saying, because if you mean something different, we're going to be it's going to be a weird call.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I'm glad you did that because I think there's various forms of the cosmological argument.
Yes, there are.
I think Leibniz put forward. Yeah. So you know the one there's sort of this ultimate one, which is why is there anything at all?
Sure.
And the explanation is, well, God is the explanation for that.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's not really to me a fully satisfactory answer, because then you still kind of wonder like where did God come from?
Right.
But it's a little bit better than having no answer at all. And at least with God, it's not a material. You're not talking about something material. If you don't, go ahead.
Yeah, I have some thoughts. So you mentioned that you might have some biases in there. And the truth is we all have biases, right?
Sure.
And I think that's important that you point that out. And I'm really glad because that means you're honest with yourself. We all want to be honest with ourselves. What you said was just right now is interesting. It's better that there's an answer than there isn't one at all. And that is a bias, right? That is a bias of human beings. Yeah. We want there to be an answer to something, even when we don't have all the best information to make a decision on something. And I think this is a very popular case where this happens. I think a lot of people feel the same way. I think a lot of people are like, well, I'd rather there be something than nothing when talking about this. Now, when we talk about the cosmological argument, we're talking about ultimately an argument that relies on metaphysics. And metaphysics is outside, of course, the realm of science, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't say it like our investigative methodologies and principles are not going to be applicable to any kind of argument that's made on metaphysical grounds. So when it comes to metaphysics, Forrest and I, we're not the biggest fans, I would say.
You could lump me into the non-fans for sure.
Because you can make any kind of argument with a metaphysical argument. Honestly, you can say that it's pink unicorns that made the universe. Really, this idea that we have of God comes from a classical Western tradition idea of God that we kind of unconsciously put into these arguments, even though if you look at like what a baseline cosmological argument is saying, it really has nothing to do with the Christian God. It has nothing to do with any traditional concept of that God. It's talking about a being that is completely unidentifiable for any major world religion. And maybe that's where you are. Maybe that's what you're saying. Maybe you're not a traditional Christian. Maybe you're coming at a different place than that. But like, it really doesn't inform us anything about what we can observe in the universe. It's just an idea, you know? We might as well be saying, oh, we all come from a supercomputer, or we all come from aliens. You know, like, unless we have any hard, definable way of talking about that in any material words or material ways, we're taking ideas out of thin air, you know? And that's how I feel about the cosmological argument in general and most variations of it. It doesn't say much.
Yeah, I would also point out that, like, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there when we were saying, like, you can apply it to anything. It's like, that's, people call, talk to me all the time, like, how do you know we're not in a simulation? It's the same thing. It's an unfalsifiable claim.
Right.
There's no way, even if I could give you proof positive that we're not in a simulation, you could then say that proof is part of the simulation too. And even if I were to wake up from the simulation, you could then say you're now in level two of the simulation. And it's the same thing with this. Anything that I could do to prove that there's no God, if that was possible, you could then say that too is part of the organized structure of the whatever.
Yep.
And like, what bothers me the most about it is that I entirely hear what you're saying about, like, you know, it sucks that we may not have an answer, but I'd rather be honest and say that I don't know. Like, that's, I'm on the complete opposite side of the fence from you. I don't know what happened before the Big Bang, because I don't think what happened before the Big Bang is even a question that makes logical sense when you understand what the Big Bang is. And so, like, here's this area that, like, I have no even comprehension of what question I'm allowed to ask within the confines of physics. I don't know what that is, but that doesn't mean I'm happy. It keeps me up at night. I'm itching to know. It kills me that I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'd rather just say I don't know than make something up and then have to, like, work with that for my whole life and then be wrong later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, a lot of words from us. What do you think about that, Tom? Mark, sorry.
Those are great points. Those are great points, and I would have two responses. One, as an initial thing, is that it somewhat seems like it leaves you with agnosticism, because you're left saying, I don't know, and there's not this strong affirmative case saying there is no God. Okay, so that's just one point I would just mention.
Right,
And well, if you really want to, we can get into the meaning of that word and whether you're in, like, it's a qualifier or a separate thing.
Many of us use the terminology agnostic atheist to philosophically put a fine point on our positions. So that's also a thing, which is confusing for people.
Fair enough.
It is frustrating.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to get real pedantic, we'd love to.
Yeah.
But we don't have to.
Yeah. But your second point, go ahead, Mark.
Okay. All right. So the second point on the metaphysical argument and sort of the value of that. See, the way I look at it is, you ultimately have to, at some point, rely on metaphysics or something beyond science, because you cannot prove science or logic using science or logic. That's just circuit.
I disagree.
So you're sort of, if you're taking, so can you then explain how you could prove a logical statement without relying on logic?
Right. Well, the whole point of science and logic is that it's something that gets you out of your own way. It stops you from allowing your biases to interfere with your reasoning. That's the whole point of the scientific method. That's the whole point of logical and critical thinking. Like, that's what they're for. And so, like, those things have a history, a demonstrable history of giving us factual information and of teaching us things that we wouldn't have had access to otherwise. You know what I mean? So, like, if you look at, you know,
I agree with that.
So, like, that's the, if I wouldn't say that it's circular to then say, like, I can use, you know, the scientific method to fact check my own science and make sure that I'm on the right track here, because that's not circular. That's just using the same method.
Let me draw an analogy. Roger Penrose wrote, I think it was called The Emperor's New Clothes or something like that.
Mm. The Emperor Has No Clothes.
He has this theory of consciousness. The Emperor Has No Clothes, right.
Yeah.
He has this theory of consciousness with Stuart Hameroff, right? And he bases it on Gödel's incompleteness theorem,
right?
Right, which shows that for any system of arithmetic, right? There's going to be truth statements that cannot be demonstrated using that system.
Yeah.
What Penrose does is basically, right? So he kind of uses that as a model to say consciousness isn't computational,
right?
Because it involves understanding. And there's something deeper going on with understanding.
Yes.
And so that's the analogy I'm trying to make when we're bringing it back to the, can you prove science through science? That's sort of the point I'm trying to make is you need to step outside of the system sometimes to see whether the system is true or not.
So,
and when you look at even the word science, God.
Oh, yeah. So, Mark, what you're bringing to the table is something that I have encountered quite frequently, actually, probably pretty recently. I would identify this argumentation as a class of theism that is trying to put consciousness as the center of sort of your epistemology, right? So, you know, we can talk about Gödel's incompleteness theorem and stuff and get really hard in the paint about epistemic ideas. But for those who aren't aware, it's just this idea that mathematics itself, logical systems in itself, can't prove itself, right? That seems to be the conclusion that that these things make, right? So let's say that that's true. Let's say that Gödel's incompleteness theorem talks about this and talks about all these systems as being incomplete. That doesn't take away the value of these systems in their ability to predict phenomenon and the ability to demonstrate, you know, phenomenon happening within a certain way, right? So even though these systems may not be perfect and they may not be able to prove themselves, we really don't have any other method. So to go and say, well, we have to base it on consciousness, it has to be something supernatural, that in and of itself is not an explanation. It doesn't close the gap of Gödel's incompleteness theorem. I think this is the problem that I see when I see Christians make this point. There are some thoughtful Christians who've really thought about this and think that this somehow demonstrates the truthiness or the you know, sort of basis, the baseline strata of consciousness or the baseline strata of a God being the place where we find all knowledge or that we find all logic or that we find all understanding. But it's not. It's kind of just like another idea in a stew of ideas. You know what I mean? Like you still have to make the positive claim that this is the basis. This is where we get it from. And I've yet to see that for people who argue from your line of position. Perhaps you do have the answer, but I don't see that. Does that make sense?
Well,
I know it's a little complicated.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. And the way you just formulated it, I agree with what you just said.
Okay.
I was coming at it, and it's because I'm not making that strong of a case. Yeah. I was just coming at it more from defending the value of metaphysics.
Yeah.
And just in terms of, because even the word metaphysics, it's like it's trying to stepping outside of physics. And I don't think I would go as far as you postulated it earlier. It seemed to me like you were almost saying, look, this is a metaphysical argument, doesn't really add much to the equation. And when if you look at the word science, it used to just mean knowledge.
Yes.
And, it's now kind of evolved into this materialistic methodology where I think it's much more narrow.
Yeah.
And it's limiting. If you're only going to look at purely scientific and sort of this modern way that we use the term, information for knowledge.
Yes.
I think you're somewhat limiting yourself.
In some ways, I would agree with you, but
I'm almost like trying to make the argument that.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, Mark, but only because we have to, kind of have to wrap up this call in a bit here, but, I think where I get into the disagreement with folks who go down this route of the metaphysics route is when we talk about consciousness, I understand consciousness as being a material physical phenomenon, right? And so if I understand it as a physical material phenomenon, then science does actually give us a basis and science can give us kind of a central understanding for a lot of the things that we talk about within consciousness. I think there's evidence of this. I could talk about this, but I do make that claim. Now, of course, there's a lot of people who practice metaphysics who disagree with that and say consciousness is something else and is outside of itself and therefore can be used as a baseline. I disagree with that. I don't know if I have time to go into it, to be honest with you, Mark, but there is, there are folks like me who do think like I do, and that's what I would say. My response go ahead. What's that?
And allow me to challenge you on this if you may. Do you think you're coming to that conclusion? Are you somewhat putting the cart before the horse, or are you arriving at that conclusion because you're an atheist or agnostic, and that is what...
I think a Christian can understand that your consciousness is completely based on material phenomena. For example, if I hit Forrest over the head with a hammer and I give him permanent brain injury, your consciousness is going to be affected.
I will fundamentally change as a person.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And what I've done is I've changed the physical characteristics of Forrest. In other words, the material phenomenon that's producing his consciousness has been fundamentally altered. And therefore, there has to be a physical basis of consciousness. Now, there are some people that will say, well, the soul exists outside of the body. The soul is like a radio transmitter. You're just receiving that. Right. But there's no evidence of that.
Yeah.
There is no evidence of that. There's been no ways to demonstrate how that could be true. Again, it's just another idea, and that's the problem, is that it's unfalsifiable. Yeah. We go back into this realm of not being able to show one way or another which idea could be true or not true. Does that make sense, Mark?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does, and you're right. There's no evidence of that. And I would say, just like if an Aborigine found a radio and he started listening to it, he would have no evidence that there's electromagnetic waves and there's a tower somewhere, and it might take him a long time to figure that out. In the interim, all he sees is the radio, like you said, with that analogy.
Yeah.
So it works. It kind of cuts both ways. I mean, we also have no evidence of how, we have no model. They're not even in the stratosphere of explaining how consciousness could be epiphenomenal.
Well, yeah.
So it's just a lot of hand waving going on.
Right.
And they don't, they don't have a model to do that. So I think it cuts both ways, and we're,
And I can clone an animal. I can clone, even we can clone human beings, and they're going to have a consciousness. So either we just, that really just kind of breaks down this idea of where we're getting that consciousness from. It seems to be a material phenomenon. That seems to be it. But I'm sorry, Mark, we are running out of time for this call. We're already going really over. I have to cut you off now. But I really appreciate what you brought to the discussion.
Cool, man.
I think this was really great.
I really appreciate it.
Awesome. I hope you call in again. I hope you keep watching.
Great job. I'll try to call in again.
Thanks so much, Mark. Notice the difference in conversation between
Mark was super nice. I wanted
Tom
to get into it a little bit. Yeah. I know we don't have time, but I wanted to touch on it. If Mark, if you're still listening, like, there's one thing that I think is really important, and that's just like the concept of naturalism and also uniformitarianism. Just these are the you could call them, I guess, the presuppositions of science. It's the idea that like there is a natural explanation because everything has had a natural explanation.
Right.
And the same processes that work here, the same laws of physics here, the same laws of physics everywhere else. So like with those ideas in mind, the very concept of metaphysics kind of sucks, because you're then saying like everything is this way except for this special thing. And then, like we've said a million times, I don't want to be dead for the bike. Then you can apply that to absolutely anything, and you're lost.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is conversations like this, though, that I do think atheists should engage in, because
absolutely,
I think people really make the mistake, like they really fall short on what Mark is saying here, because it is very nuanced. It is very different.
It's not as easy as just like, oh, there's no reason to think that blah. There's something to talk about.
There is something to talk about that's much deeper. We have some other folks that we want to talk to today, so we are going to keep the show going. But before we do that, I have to tell you guys about the next time that we are doing a show in studio. Okay, of course, all of our shows are live, but only a certain number of them get to be in studio like this one. The next one that we're going to be doing is December 16th for Truth Wanted, and then December 18th for Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience. So consider joining us in the studio, in the audience at the ACA Freethought Library for the live broadcasts of those. And also for Secular Sexuality, too. I forgot to mention that. Secular Sexuality will be on that Thursday. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Thursday and Friday, and noon on Sunday. And parking is where you can find a legal spot. And of course, a lot of people ask us about this, too. It's completely free to come in here. There is absolutely no cost for you to come. So we would love it if you guys can fill up our seats and join us in the audience.
That said, if you guys out there want to give us money, we're not going to stop
you.
Like we're
not going to stop
Dan and I specifically, not the organization.
Hey, I'm just
saying.
That's just us, baby. That's private transaction. So if you can make it there, that'd be great. If not, I mean, we're going to do a show anyway, so you can watch it.
We'll be here.
For any other information regarding that, or if you have questions, go to our website, atheist-community.org, for news on that as it happens. And now I think it's time we do our top five patrons.
Oh my God.
Announcement. You ready for this?
Yeah, I'm super ready. I've never done this before.
Forrest, you want to do it?
I'll do one of them.
Yeah, okay. We got the top five patrons. Why don't you start there at number one there, Forrest?
I want a number two. Damn. All right, fine. Yeah. So number one is Eric Tweet. Eric Tweet, you are the number one spot on the Patreons. Thank you so much for being there.
Thank you so much. Number two is going to be Dingleberry Jackson. It is a fun name to say.
It's a great
I know
name.
Why you wanted to have number
well
two.
Well done for your name, Dingleberry Jackson. Thank you so much.
You want number three for
I'll
us?
Take number three. Number three is the Bearded Skeptic of TikTok.
Woo!
Nice plug. Well done.
We got that TikTok representation
love
here
that.
Today.
Love that. As a TikToker as well, you know,
it's
the
happened.
Brotherhood.
It's the
family.
Oh, my God. Next one, number four, we got Daver Valjin. Thank you so much, Daver, for giving us the ACA
yeah.
Money for Patreon.
At number five, it looks like IMA. Is that how it pronounced that? A-Y-A-M-E?
IMA?
IMA? A-A-M-E? I don't A-M-E. Know.
I wish we had pronunciation guides. They should force
it might
you.
Just be Amy with like a little extra lilt in there, you know, like A-M-E.
Patreon should force you to give a pronunciation
just
guide.
Just write
for
it
your
out
name.
Phonetically.
Even if it's just like John. Like it needs to have it. I
yes.
advocate for that as
whatever policy. Your name is, we're glad you're here.
Yes.
And thank you for paying so much money for me to butcher your name. That's what we're here for.
Oh my God.
The service we're happy to provide.
Right, right. And of course, our honorable mention today is going to go to Vivin Murray. Vivin,
yeah, it says
Vivin. Vivin Murray. Thank you so much, Vivin, for donating. And thank you, of course, to everybody that donates on the Patreon. You guys are awesome and you help make this show happen. So yeah. We're moving on. We're going to another caller here. Let's talk to, I think, Yasir. Please correct us if we're pronouncing
if,
incorrectly.
If you too have your butcher, right. Your name butchered by the ACA.
Yasir, you're calling from India. What's going on?
Yeah, hi, you two.
So, hello.
Thank you for accepting my call.
Of course. Did I get your name right?
Forrest, yes. I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yasir.
Okay, great. Yasir, how's it going?
Yes, it's great. Like I said, I'm from India. It's around 2 a.m. here, so I'm trying my best not to be too loud.
That makes sense.
Thanks for staying up late for us, man.
Yes. So what do you want to talk to us about today?
So fortunately, we have a biologist with us today. So I want to discuss a bit about speciation. So
yeah,
well, I learned a bit about this in school. And after that, I just heard about this in YouTube again with Forrest videos.
Yeah. So do you have a particular question about it or just like in general?
Christian school? Mostly in general, because like I was saying, in school, I studied in a Christian school. So when the topic of evolution came up, the teacher was like, you can just study it on your own. I'm not going to talk about it because I'm not believing in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think would happen if you tell a bunch of 15-year-olds you can study this on your own?
Right, exactly. I love it whenever if you talk to a science teacher at one of these schools that, you know, tries to avoid the topic of evolution, or they try to, they say, oh, I gave it a fair shake, you know, I taught it whatever. Just ask them to define it or ask a simple question about it and see if they can handle it. You know what I mean? Generally speaking, it's like, you know, that guy that called in earlier, Tom, very adamantly against it, has no idea what it is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So mostly I just went into it using my own studies, like my own online research and stuff. And yes, so I am a fossil collector. I used to collect fossils since I was young, but I didn't know what it actually was until I saw Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just now I'm...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you want to take this call specifically. Was there like, you know, was there a general topic you want to talk about? Maybe an experience you had?
Well, he was asking about speciation. Is there a particular question that you have about speciation, or is it just like trying to understand the concept as a whole?
Yes, so it's kind of like a tiny question, but we can discuss it further if we have time. So
yeah,
it's about speciation. So like I said, I was studying about this online, and I came up with the topic like the dogs evolving into the gray wolves that evolve into dogs and carps evolving into goldfish and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's a simple thing, like one species to another, that's very easy to look at, and we can do it on our own, and we have been making use of it for billions of years, and that's okay. That's easily understandable, like, and all the stuff. So, but I, like I said, I'm a fossil collector, and recently I got a bunch of fossils that show the human evolution stuff. So
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about that. Like, how can one family change to another? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Speciation, it's like one species to another. That's a bit understandable, but one family to another, I have a...
So like, you're talking about like big changes, like not just one species, but like actually like one kind of animal to another kind of, like that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, like like a best example with the fossils I have is like a fish to a tiktaalik.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's really important to remember about this is, you know, I'll start with the concept of species. I know that's not what you're asking, but it's important to kind of get the gist, is that, like, it's important to remember that a species isn't a real thing.
Yep.
It's just a label that we made up, that we
social
put on
construct,
stuff. Social construct. Right. It's just a thing that we use to define stuff, and there is no single set definition of what a species actually is. If you ask somebody, generally speaking, you know, if you talk about the concept of species in you know, everyday terms, or in a middle school science class, they might say something like, if two organisms can't reproduce to produce fertile offspring, then those are two different species. And that's what's called the biological species concept. But if you listen there, it's not the biological species law or theory or rule. It's just a concept. And there's lots of other species concepts as well, because that concept of what a species is has a million exceptions. And it doesn't actually work when we're in the day-to-day, when we're trying to, like, draw a line on what a species is. It's not usually very functional in our everyday life. And so there's an ecological species concept, which is all about the places, the niches that organisms inhabit in an ecosystem. There's a phylogenetic species concept, which is all about their relationships to each other. And there's several different subdivisions of the phylogenetic species concept that all depend on how you group things together, right? And so when we talk now about, you know, families, about higher classifications from species, it's also important to remember that those lines are also pretty arbitrary. If you want to have fun, look up the definition of a fish. And you'd think that it's just like, here's five things that make you a fish, but that's not, because fish is it's what we call a polyphyletic group. It's this huge, weird, it's a generally poikilothermic aquatic animal that is sometimes covered in scales, and when not is this other thing, and it tends to have these kinds of fins, but if it has fins and something, yeah. And like, so there's this big, weird, you know, and so like with some species or with some groups, it's pretty easy to draw a line, especially with the really big and really small groups. It's pretty easy to draw, like, it's these five things. But when you talk about something like, you know, a fish to tiktaalik, for example, what's important to remember is that tiktaalik was still a fish. Tiktaalik was a sarcopterygian fish, which means he had great big lobe fins with thick wrist and hand muscles that allowed him to push himself along. And then you go the next step up, pick one like Ichthyostega, which was a proper tetrapod living on the land. By classification terms, because of this cool thing called nested hierarchies, we could say that Ichthyostega was still technically a fish as well. It just had these other qualifications that now also made it this other thing. And so we're just going to call it a tetrapod. And you can go all the way down to, you know, from that, amphibians to reptiles to the very first mammals, you know, mammals evolved 220 million years ago. So, like, you can now draw this line and say, okay, so now these things are, they're generally warm-blooded. Not all mammals have been, but, like, generally speaking, they are. And they have fur, and they lactate, and they have a post-anal tail, and they have a notochord. So we're going to, okay, so here we've got these things that now we're going to call mammals. But technically they're fish too. And it's just these new qualifications now that we're going to add on there. And so this is actually a fun thing you can do if you want to blow somebody's mind when learning taxonomy for the first time, piss off people like Tom that called in a little while ago, is that if you actually arrange these properly because of these things, is what we call these nested phylogenies, these hierarchical ways that we arrange our family trees, you could absolutely call every land animal that isn't an insect a fish, and it would be right. It's the same way that you can call birds reptiles. So that's the best answer I can give you, is just to remember that these taxa, these groups are they're just our labels for looking at life as it is now, looking at the fossil record, and we say, okay, it has these qualifications, we're going to lump it in this way. And those qualifications, those things that made them that, we can track their evolutionary history, and a lot of them evolved independently several times, so we can kind of make these little boxes, and not a single one of those boxes is a simple cut and dry thing. That was me talking for a long time. Yasir, does that answer your question, or is that what you're at? Or did I completely blow it and you had a totally different thing to ask about?
No, I get that. So mostly when I try to explain stuff to my family members, I just say, like, our hands and legs are just higher forms of fins, evolved forms of fins. That's how I explain it to my family members.
Yeah. It's hard because, like, a lot of times when we talk about things like higher forms, like, we mean really complex, you know, animals and plants and things that are really, really interesting and intricate.
Yeah.
But it sounds like we're talking about things that are more important or more evolved or something like that. And that's nonsense. It's why I hate the phrase, like, the Big Bang, because the Big Bang sounds like there was an explosion and then planets came out. And that's nonsense.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's meaningless. But so it's the same thing. We talk about things like higher formed or complex life forms, things like like that, it sounds like I'm more evolved than a bacteria. And that's just not the case. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's just a different classification. Yeah. They have different qualifiers than I have. And if I met XYZ qualification, then yeah, I would fit them. And if they had XYZ qualification, they'd fit me. You know what I mean?
That's one of my most annoying things when people are like, oh, we're more evolved than other species.
Yeah.
When anybody says that, it's like, okay, you have not read enough.
It doesn't make sense.
Like, it's like, that's not how evolution
Everything
works.
That is currently alive is as evolved. Yeah. Everybody should know. And like, that's just, so yeah, that's the thing. It's that these groupings that we do when we classify life, when we do taxonomy and phylogenetics and we classify things, it all boils down to like trying our best to lump things in together. And that doesn't always work. There's a reason why, you know, the word pachyderm isn't used anymore. We used to have the group called pachyderms, which was like elephants and hippopotamuses and things like that. And the word pachyderm literally means thick skinned. And so we're like, okay, so here's all these giant land animals that have this really thick, weird skin, and they do this and that. And it turns out, like, as we actually dig into it, that, you know, hippopotamuses are more closely related to blue whales than they are to elephants. It doesn't actually work that way. And so now we classify elephants as a new thing, which we call proboscideans, which means, you know, proboscis. They got that big long trunk. And so we have that going on. Hippopotamuses are definitely artiodactyls, which mean hippopotamuses are, yeah, you know, pretty closely related to, like, deer, and that's pretty cool. So, like, it isn't always as easy as it is the first time, but it's just that was one group that we drew up, and it turns out we were wrong, and so we changed the group. It doesn't mean that they changed. We just changed the definition. And it's the same thing with any kind of speciation. It's just they now fit the new definition of the new thing, so we're going to call it that. It doesn't mean the boxes actually exist.
Yep. Yep. That, a lot of words from Forrest.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just spewing.
Like,
go ahead.
It's okay. So I've been watching most of your videos, and every time I look at the video, so one thing I haven't practiced that I pride myself on is that whenever I hear something, I just don't believe it. I just go and research on it as much as possible to get to know, like, what he's talking about or what it's coming from and all the stuff. So, like I said, I'm pretty close to what Forrest is saying. I understand about 90% of what he said, except the complex terms that I understand everything.
Good thing is, this show is recorded, so you can go back and you can make lecture notes, and you can ask Professor, Falkai if you have any other questions, and I'm sure he'll answer them in future shows.
And I appreciate you. Like, don't ever, like, anything that I say, don't ever just take it for granted. Yeah, right. Absolutely, keep checking. I've been wrong before. I've been wrong on this show before. I've said something that was stupid, and then I had to go back and correct myself the next time I was on. So, like, that's always the best way to do it. Question absolutely everything, especially me.
100%. Anything else you got on that? Nope.
Not much. I got my questions answered. So, just a personal thing. So, is there any resources or books, anything that you can suggest for me to learn more about this? Anything?
Any good books about this? I mean, if you want to learn just about, like, the history of life in general and, like, how we group things now and where those things came from, there's a book called The Ancestor's Tale, which is by Richard Dawkins, I think. And it's a thick bitch of a book, and it's awesome. And it'll go into everything about, like, how these different traits and different groups and everything, where they came from. And that's radical. As far as actually just learning about, like what we would do, like, cladistics or systematics, like, when we, you know, break things down, that's something I can't come up with a book off the top of my head that just would be interesting for anybody, but, like, that's something that you can absolutely research more very easily online. But I would recommend The Ancestor's Tale if you want to get into, like, just learning what groups are and where they came from and why they are the way they are. That's a pretty cool one.
Yeah, and I don't have any good books. I think Forrest probably gave you enough book reading for that.
That book will take you a while to get through. It's intense.
Right. Well, with that out of the way, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up this call then. Thanks so much for giving a call in. I don't get to talk to people from India.
Jesse was super nice.
I know.
A nice dude.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. I think you need to put on a lab coat, Forrest.
Yeah, no, that way people will believe me. Yeah.
Forrest Valkai, the science guy. What do you think?
Valkai, the science guy.
It
rhymes. It works.
See, Bill Nye, I don't think he can own the science guy.
Yeah,
I think anybody can be the science.
He must be a science guy.
Yeah, he's a science guy.
Bill Nye, a science guy.
He's just a science guy, guys.
We'll call him after this and tell him.
I'm just saying, like, you know, you can work with that. I'm sure he wouldn't mind.
I'd be into it. He seems like the kind of guy who wants to share.
I think he'd be cool with it.
Oh, no, he seems nice. Sure.
If as long as you were, like, educating the public.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll get a bow tie. It'll be great.
Yeah, well, Now, that might infringe on his personal brand a bit. Yeah, exactly. You know,
a copyright infringement.
Maybe you need a regular
tall, skinny white guy with a bow tie. Yeah. Can't be two of us in the universe. Right, right. If we touch, it'll annihilate.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Well, with that, I think we need to start wrapping up today's show real quickly. I want to give, of course, a thank you to Forrest
for having me
here. Forrest, where can people find you at outside of the show?
You can find me. Just go to ValkyLabs.com and you can see all of my socials there. Find me on them YouTubes and the TikToks. I've got a new series called The Light of Evolution, which is all about how evolutionary biology works. And if you're interested in speciation and all that stuff, or if you're Tom and you want to know about how evolution works, episode 3 comes out right now. I'm setting it to public in this very moment.
Oh, shit. Tom, he's doing a special release just for you.
So, Tom, go watch this and learn a thing or two about speciation and how the evidence for evolution is.
That is a mic drop I've never seen. Somebody dropping a YouTube video right now and be like, hey, listen, I prepared.
There's a 37-minute video that I just set to live that you can learn about genes and generations is what this one's called.
Damn, dude. That's a flex. That's a flex. I gotta say.
That's episode 3. There's an hour of other content for you to learn about.
Well, that's really awesome. I don't have any content I'm putting out right now, but you can find me on Twitter at Objectively Dan. As long as Twitter still exists, it may not be a thing by next week, but right. You know, we'll see. And of course, this is Talk Keith, and this is the Atheist Beat of Awesome. We do this live show every Sunday, so if you missed out this time, come call in next time. Or better yet, come see us in person when we do have those episodes. Real quick, just a few things. Please like, please subscribe, please comment, please engage with us. That not only helps the YouTube algorithm, but of course, we want to get your feedback on all this stuff.
Tell your grandma so she can talk to her bridge club about it.
Yes.
Get everybody else in on it.
Have your grandma call in to the show. We'd love to talk to your grandma. We're pro grandma.
Have her send cookies to the Free Thought Library.
Ooh,
we'd love to have them.
That's a good idea. So make sure you stick around because we're going to put on the nonprofits pretty soon after this. Of course, I need to give a special thank you to the wonderful, fantastic, amazing, stupendous crew that help make this show happen.
They are all of those things. Look at them.
Look at that. We got some in studio today, some working remotely.
That one there is my favorite.
Yeah, yeah, we got that one. There's my favorite. That's brief. There's a lot of people that help make this thing happen. So if you're interested in being a volunteer in any capacity, check out our website and see if we have any opportunities for you. And of course, this is Talk Heathen, which means we get to do the love rings for us. You want to send out some love rings?
I genuinely don't know what that is, Dan. Tell me.
Okay. Well, so you know, at the end of the show here, we're just gonna wave our hands in the air like this, and we're just gonna send out some love rings in the world. There we go.
Oh,
you see that? You see
that?
It's magic, dude.
You tell me that magic isn't real.
Science,
and then this happens right there.
Explain
it doesn't
shit.
Work.
What the fuck?
I renounce my faith in Darwinism.
I'm going back, dude.
Love
rings, man. But the love rings are for everybody who watches the show and everybody who engages with us. We love everybody that wants to talk to us.
They just keep going.
They just keep going, dude. It's God's infinite love spreading across everybody who watches. But whether
that's
or not,
bullshit. It's our infinite love.
You're right. It's our infinite love. I'll take that. But whether or not you believe, if you are an essential worker, we want to thank you. If you don't believe, this is your community. Hmm? If you do believe, we don't hate you.
Yeah.
We're just not convinced. See you later, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye.
We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Friday at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw.